Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, November 14th, 2015. This is episode 1237. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace that connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/techguy to apply for a loan now. And by Epson's new EcoTank printers. With Epson's line of SuperTank all-in-one printers, you can print thousands of documents without running out of ink. Epson's EcoTank is loaded and ready to print when you are. Visit epson.com/ecotank to learn more. And by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your home. Right now, get free FedEx shipping when you go to ring.com/techguy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smart watches and all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Heather Hammond is here, the phone ranger, to answer your calls. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside those areas, you can, of course, use Skype and call, and we'd love to hear from you. 8888-ASK-LEO. Ba-da-ba-dum-bum-bum. Well, first of all, of course, our hearts and prayers go out to everyone in Paris. I think people are saying, why is this such a big deal in Paris? There have been, this war against ISIS has been, claiming lives all over the world for months now, and that's so true. But I think Paris is sometimes it's called the world's capital. It kind of is. There's something special about it, and it's horrific to see that violence there. And so our love and prayers go out to everybody there. But this isn't a news show, so I'll leave it at that. However, this is a technology show, and I have in front of me the largest iPad I've ever seen. This thing is massive. It's the new iPad Pro, which came out this week. Apple made it available on Wednesday, sometime after midnight Wednesday, and early morning on Wednesday. And then, strangely enough, I found out I could pick it up at the store, even though the stores wouldn't have one for you to look at, for anybody to look at, until Friday. So I ran over to the Apple store and I said, give me one of them. And while I was at it, I picked up a keyboard, not the Apple keyboard, which I thought was a little overpriced at $170. I'm sorry, I can't even say that without choking. But the good news is they also were offering, in fact, I don't even know if they had any Apple keyboards in stock. They were offering a Logitech case keyboard that I think is in many ways better than the Apple keyboard, because it has, unlike the Apple keyboard, dedicated keys for iOS. So it has a search key, which will pop up the iOS search. You know, that's by itself handy. A home key, a lock key if you're walking away from the keyboard. You could pop up the on-screen keyboard. There's a lot of this. You know, this is I think nicely done. It's backlit. And it's, by the way, $20 cheaper than the Apple keyboard, and doesn't charge, doesn't need batteries. It has the official Apple connector on the bottom, a nice strong magnetic connector that you can slot the iPad in, and the iPad powers up the keyboard. So that's the Logitech Create, and I like it. If you want to turn your iPad into a laptop, which I'm not sure you want to do, because it's when I compare it, I should have brought my MacBook in so I could show you on the radio. Imagine I'm holding a MacBook in my hand, under 2 pounds, thin, light, powerful, very high quality display, 12-inch display. And then in my other hand, I have the noticeably heavier, like it's over 3 pounds thicker, clunkier iPad Pro in my hands. And it's a little bit bigger. It's almost an inch bigger. It's 12.9 inches. And it is touch, right? But it makes you wonder, you know, geez, Apple, why didn't you just put... I'm sorry, I've been watching a lot of Fargo. Geez, Apple, why didn't you just put a touch screen on the laptop? Hey, that would have been much better. And you wouldn't have, you'd have nice thin light. Maybe they couldn't. I don't know. This has fingerprint unlock, which a MacBook doesn't. But then when you look at it and you go, wow, that's just because the icons are all spaced out and they're giant. It's just a giant iPad. I don't think it's going to come into its own really until you use apps that are dedicated to this particular device, and most importantly, till the pen comes out. And weirdly, Apple, which was all, you know, this is all about the pen, right? All about drawing on the screen and stuff. The pen's not available the next month, which is just going to make. Yes, I got the red. Somebody in the chat room who's watching on the video says, is that the red Starbucks holiday case? Yes, it is. I'll draw some Christmas trees and snowflakes on it later. Hey, if you're going to carry a giant, you know, it's like, I don't know how to describe it. It's like a giant notebook. If you're going to carry something around like this, you might as well just say, hey, look at me. I have the festive holiday iPad Pro. You know, I mean, it's very fast. Not that, but did anybody feel like the original, that the iPad, you know, Air 2 or the iPad Mini 4 was too slow? It's faster even than those. Doesn't have a 3D touch, which is a nice feature on the iPhone, but no iPad has it, so I guess you can't complain about that. I think really this is a... if you're asking, and I don't know if anybody is, but if anybody were to ask, should I get this? I guess my answer would be, well, only you'll know. If you're asking the question, you probably should not. You should only consider this if you know you have a need for it. If you're an artist, I imagine it's wonderful when the pen comes out. This will be spectacular. I've seen some really neat stuff done. I'm not an artist, so it's not going to help me. If you're a... I guess a musician who records on the iPad, then, you know, you'd like all that space. But what's interesting to me is Apple's selling this as a, let me see if I can pull this over here. Apple's selling this, I'm trying to get the split screen thing on. They're selling this as a laptop replacement. That's what I'm trying to spit out. They say it's the end of the PC. The PC's dead. This is the post-PC era. This is what you want. And I beg to differ, frankly. This makes me just want my... I love my MacBook, which came out earlier this year. It's the thinnest, lightest, most beautiful Macintosh ever. And I think it's great. And I wish they'd put touch on that. But I guess their answer is, well, it's not a touch operating system, so we don't want to put touch on it. Now, one thing you can do is you can slide over... And create windows for other things as well. So you can have kind of a two-window screen. It seems like a step back because didn't we have that already, Windows? It looks a lot like the Snap that Microsoft released on Windows 8, Windows Snap. I don't get it. I think, as somebody in the chat room, I Am Special says, Apple is living in a dream. Yeah. Well, I don't know. Maybe it's not a dream. I don't want to ever knock anybody for coming out with a new product. Innovation, starts with getting a great idea and trying it. And Apple is really good at this stuff. But we also give them, we give them a free pass sometimes. We say, no matter what they do, this is going to be great. And I don't think that that's, no company deserves a free pass either. And I have to say, having used this, I don't get it. Okay, I'm going to admit it. I don't get it. But I think if you get it, or if you're an artist, you should play with it and wait till the pen comes out, for sure. For sure, wait till the pen comes out. I can't understand why they even bothered. The pen's not ready. Press got the pen. A lot of reviewers got the pen. But those of us who went into a store to buy this thing or ordered it online couldn't get the pen. December 7th, they're saying, is the soonest. I guess I feel like I'm a voice of sanity in a world of kind of blind love of whatever Apple does. Apple's done so many great things. The iPhone is amazing. The iPad is amazing. The Macintosh is amazing. But not everything Apple does is amazing. This is interesting, but not sure it's amazing. 8888-ASK Leo, what do you think? We could talk about that. Anything on your mind? 8888-ASK Leo. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Your calls are next. It's a niche market. That's right. Like the Apple Watch. The Apple Watch seemed to have more appeal. At least it wasn't huge. This thing is assertively big. It occupies space in a way that a laptop even doesn't seem to. It's disproportionately huge. That's the thing I fear the most, is people taking pictures with this thing at concerts. That's going to be horrific. Here, I'll show you what it'll look like. It's going to look, you know, somebody's going to be, you're going to be at a concert enjoying a fine performance, and somebody's going to say, oh, let me get a picture of that, Marge. That looks good. Whoa. Hey, hold on. Marge, just step. There you go. Wait a minute. I think I got you. Oh, that's good. That's beautiful. Okay. Yeah. Oh, look. Bono's smiling at me. Wait a minute. Hold on. You could light up 8 rows behind you with this thing. It's so big. This 8888-ASK Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. Heather Hammon is here. Hi, Heather Hammon.
Bonjour.
Oh, don't make me sad.
I'm so sad. I'm
today
sorry.
We're all French.
I'll inflict it on everyone.
Yeah.
I'm so droopy.
Yeah, so sad. So, let's see, though. On a brighter note, we have many callers.
Yes.
And, you know, one of the things that a great global tragedy like this does is it reminds us that our petty little problems with not being able to print don't really amount to hill of beans in this crazy mixed up world. So, yes. It's good. It's good. I mean, it's good to have small problems.
And that said, radio brings us great joy and all together.
Thank you, Pollyanna. Nurse Pollyanna's
with us.
Well,
you do see where I'm going with this.
Is it time to take a call?
Well, JC in Sherman Oaks.
Yeah?
He's trying to do the right thing, technologically speaking.
I don't blame him.
But now it's gummed up his receiving our show.
Well, that's not right. let's take that call. Thank you, Heather. Hi, JC, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. What's going on?
Hey, Leo. You guys are talking about how radio brings us great joy, and definitely. You know, I have recess lights in my home, and recently I upgraded all my bulbs with LED bulbs.
Yeah.
And now I listen to you guys on my transistor radio, because I'm a fan of transistor radio, and now it's really messing up the quality of sound. It just sounds like it really interferes with my AM stations now. I can't hear you. I have to turn off the lights, and then, you know, it's crystal clear, but I've been also talking to other people who've been having similar problems when they do this, when they upgrade to LED bulbs. Do you know anything about this?
Have
you heard anything about this?
It's not
is
true.
Is there anything that can be done?
Yes. Get a different bulb. Not all LED. This is what you're getting is RF, radio frequency interference. Fluorescent lights can sometimes do this too. And it's putting out interference on the same band as you're trying to listen on. So, there is actually a whole website, are you ready, dedicated to this fascinating issue.
Oh, man. Oh, wow.
LEDbenchmark.com. And they measure the emissions from various LED bulb manufacturers. Not all of them have the same issues, apparently.
Hmm.
So I don't know which brands, I'm not sure I'd recommend yet which brands are good or not. What brand did you get, and were they dimmable? Apparently the dimmables cause maybe some more issues than
Yeah, others. They are dimmables. Yeah. It's a very popular brand. I think it starts with an L-I, is it L-E or L-Leif? I can't remember.
Yeah, that's fine. It's the switching power circuitry. The LEDs don't actually do anything. It's the circuitry on them. And they're not, the bulbs you got are not properly filtered. The FCC, of course, regulates this, and they're not going to allow a light bulb. How many did you put in?
I've got like 30.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
They're not going to allow light bulb manufacturers to put light bulbs out that will interfere with radio broadcasts. That's illegal.
Huh.
So,
these are the kind that you buy, you can buy them
at
the same brand.
You know, it's frustrating too, because what's nice is they've gotten cheap. When I saw the first LED light bulbs, Bob Crane of C. Crane showed me, and he was so excited. He said, "This is going to be the next big thing." This was some years ago, and they were $90. And I said, "I don't think it's going to be the next big thing in $90 a light bulb." He said, "But they last 20 years." I said, "Yeah, but people, you know, it's how much it costs today, not 20 years from now. But they've come down, right? I bet you paid about $10 for those."
Yeah.
And that's worth it. If it's going to last 20 years, even though you can get a 99-cent bulb that'll do the same amount of light for a year, it's just nice. You don't have to change it. I put them in places where I don't want to go up there again or open it up again. That's where I think they're great. LEDbenchmark.com has a whole FAQ on LED radio interference issues. They review different bulbs. They talk about which ones are better. You've already put a pretty big investment into those bulbs, $300.
Yeah, or more. Actually.
Or more. And, unfortunately, it's a cautionary tale for the rest of us.
Yeah.
Maybe get one and put a radio next to it and see if you notice interference.
Right.
It shouldn't. And I guess you should complain. You know, wouldn't be a bad idea to write a note to the FCC saying, "Hey, by the way, this is not, this is causing interference." They're supposed to suppress it. They're supposed to suppress it. That's part of the deal, to get FCC certification.
Right. Okay, interesting.
I'm sorry that you got a bunch of them. And it may be that you have so many of them. If it's they add up. It's additive.
Yeah, cumulative effect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Golly, I don't know what to say. Maybe spread them out?
I wish that there was some sort of gizmo or something that can negate what these things give off. I was hoping that
there might be. There might be. When you have this kind of interference coming from a power cord, for instance, you could put an iron choke on it that actually eliminates it.
Uh-huh.
And so I'll have to investigate. That's an interesting question. The problem is, what are you going to do? It'd have to be something that screw into the socket, then you screw the bulb into that.
Right.
That might work, actually.
Right.
That's a really interesting question. Of course, the other option is to stop listening to... Don't tell the radio station I said this. Stop listening to the over-the-air broadcasts and start listening to the internet broadcasts.
Right.
Because,
right,
in fact, those... And it's the same station. It's just the broadcast on the internet.
Yeah, I just love my transistor radio.
Yeah, I do too. I do too.
For emergencies, I'm kind of fanatical.
One thing you could look at is the dimmer as well. Because they're on a dimmer, you might have an electrician come out. You can actually, there are devices you can measure RF.
Uh-huh.
And you can say, where's that coming from? You might have an electrician come out and find out. Maybe it's just the dimmer. Replacing the dimmer might, in fact, fix that.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, sorry I can't give you... a magic choke that you could put in there. It is a shame, I think. It's a new category, and I think that a lot of these bulbs are probably made in China and by Chinese manufacturers who perhaps maybe skirt the rules a little bit, or they get FCC approval and they modify how they make it. That kind of thing. So this is a new one for me, so I'll have to do some more research on it. We'll see if we can find out. 8888 Ask Leo. If you've got a solution, I'd love to hear from you. Coming up, Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru with some home theater tips. Maybe he'll know. He's good at that kind of thing. And a little later on, I'm hoping, I think we have Chris Marquardt, our photo guy. All that coming up. You stay tuned. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. From Johnny Jet, I mean. Flies drive me to distraction. You could put the radio, you could put the radio closer and see what's going on there. Well, that song means it's time for the home theater guru, Mr. Scott Wilkinson, signing in for duty. Scott joins us every week. He's the editor-in-chief at the AVS Forum.
AVS Forum.
AVS Forum.
.com.
They took it off the lower third, so I don't know now. AVSforum.com. And he's a home theater geek at twit.tv/HTG. That's his podcast. Hey, Scotty.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm great. What's up?
Hey, well, as you know, I subbed for you last week, and it was tremendous fun.
Thank you, by the way. Thank you so much for filling in.
Oh, it's always my pleasure. And I took a call from a guy who wanted to get some headphones. He lives in an apartment, and he's got very thin walls, and he doesn't want to bother his neighbors. So he wanted some headphones with true surround in them, and we talked about that for a while. But then, subsequently, I got an email from Windows Rules who said, hey, you should check these out, which I hadn't known about. They're a pair of Sonys called the MDR DS7500.
I was very sad. I had a pair of Dolby headphones they never released in the United States. A wonderful sound.
Yes, exactly. And we talked about Dolby headphone. That's a function that now resides in a few AV receivers.
Yeah.
And will work with any pair of headphones. Sounds to me like you had some that had it built in.
I had wireless ones. It was built in. It was amazing. It was really great. Yeah. It had Dolby decoding and all of that. But it did a good job of, with, you know, two ears, making it surround.
Yeah, exactly.
So these Sonys, what technology are they using?
Well, it's hard to say. It looks like a signal processing like Dolby headphone.
Right.
Called New Cinema Mode, something like that. Something called VPT technology. I haven't looked at these deeply yet, but I just wanted to bring them up as being another option. They have a base station with three HDMI inputs, so you can plug in different sources to them, and you can hear surround. Without having to have speakers. Now they're on the order of $300. So they're not exactly cheap, but it is another solution that I just wanted to throw out there. Speaking of headphones, I did want to bring your attention to something quite astonishing, actually, from Sennheiser. You know Sennheiser, right?
Oh, great headphones.
Great headphones. Yeah. I've used them in my studio for years, many, many years. Well, they in 1991, they came out with a headphone called the Orpheus, which was sort of the absolute top of the heap, $16,000. They made 300 of them, and then they stopped. And so everyone thought they sounded fantastic. I mean, even if they're astronomically expensive. Well, this week they announced the rebirth of the Orpheus, and it's not $16,000. It's $55,000.
Never mind.
Oh man. You know, but they come on a solid block of Carrara marble and tube amps in the marble and transistor amps, MOSFET amps, in the cans themselves. And they're electrostatic headphones, which means that it's a big flat membrane that vibrates. And the more expensive headphones, some of them do use this. Stax, STAX is another example. Hi-Fi Man is another example. And I haven't heard them yet. I had an opportunity. Somebody said, hey, they're going to be in L.A. They probably made it like a few of them. Well, they're going to be in L.A. last Thursday, right when I was doing my podcast. So I said, sorry, can't go hear them for myself. Wish I could. But I have heard some reports since then that said these are undoubtedly the best headphones in the world. But for $55,000, you can buy a car for that, for heaven's sakes.
Well, you know, the magic of spending that much money is they're bound to sound better. You just have to make
them. Well, there is that, isn't there?
Yeah.
Same thing I talk about all the time in terms of people who spend tons of money on cables.
Yeah.
you know, really, really expensive cables. I mean, there are cables out there. You can spend $20,000 for, you know, a pair of three foot cables. And I'm just going, can you really hear the difference? Well, those who spend that kind of money absolutely can from a subjective point of view anyway. It brings up the whole question of, you know, objective measurement versus subjective experience. And Tyle Hertzens, my personal headphone guru, talks about this quite a bit, that even a tiny difference in objective measurement can sometimes lead to a very large subjective impression. He likens it to, you know, a little tiny pebble in your shoe. It's tiny,
right?
But it really bugs you after a while. You really notice it. Seriously.
Well, I think that that's true, actually, really, in most cases, that the difference between really good headphones and just okay headphones is fairly minor. You have to know what to listen for, right?
And being a trained listener and knowing what to listen for, as you say, yes, that's absolutely critical. You will find more people noticing the difference and being able to reliably tell the difference if they know what to listen for. Exactly so.
Yeah. What headphones do you wear and like? I see you're wearing Bob Heil's headphones, the Heil set.
Bob Heil Pro Set 3 is what I use for my podcast. They're really light. They're really comfortable. That's actually
another factor that really is important when you buy headphones.
It is.
Remember the old Cost? What were those? The Pro 4
Pro 4A. 4A, I think.
They weighed 10 pounds, and they were heavy, hard plastic. And at least for those of us who wear headphones for a living, and I'm one of them, you are too, comfort is probably almost as important as sound quality. There's a great company called Grado, which is a little Brooklyn company that makes headphones.
Absolutely.
People swear by.
Absolutely.
But I don't wear them because they're not that comfortable.
Mm. But they have good sound quality.
Great.
That's absolutely true. Yeah.
You know, maybe
the founder, Joe Grado, died at 90 earlier this year.
It's very sad. But those are amazing headphones. But the on-ear headphones always felt I couldn't wear them for more than, you know, half an hour or an hour.
Yeah, that's why I like the over the ear, which is what you're wearing and what I these are more or less over the ear. They're slightly on the ear, but
these are the AKGs that are most common in studios. There are two kinds that are very common. The Sennheiser, very light over ear headphones, are very popular in radio because they're so light. They don't sound good at all, but they just sit there.
Right.
In fact, I know a lot of radio hosts who care so little about sound. They have I don't know how else to describe it, except it's a plastic box that hangs on their ear.
And really?
Yeah. A lot of the old timers, I won't name names, where basically what is effectively like a little speaker in a plastic box that they hang on their ear. It's ridiculous. Mm. but if you go to recording studios, the headphones I'm wearing, the AKG K240s are often the choice because they sound good, but they are very, you know, you can wear them for a long session.
For hours and hours, Well, these Sennheisers, I'm sure you'd be able to wear for hours and hours as well.
Yeah.
You know, they're lambskin ear cups and, you know, all fancy schmancy.
You can buy those for these too. I have new ear cups on my K240s because the leather ones started to crack. So now I have some sort of plush material on mine.
In my studio, I normally use a Sony MDR 7506, I think.
Yeah.
And I've had to replace those ear cups two or three times.
Well, if you get a good pair of headphones. Someday we should talk about breaking them in. But we're running out of time here. I just want to point people to the Home Theater Geeks podcast where Scott Wilkins discusses stuff like this ad infinitum.
never a loss of anything to talk about.
Twit.tv, twit.tv/HTG for Home Theater Geeks. And, of course, avsforum.com where Scott writes and he joins us each and every week. And do you want people to email you? What's your email address?
Oh, scott@twit.tv.
Well, that's easy.
Easy.
And thanks again for filling in and doing such a great job on Saturday.
My pleasure.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. I got to find these headphones.
Yeah, you got to find them, man. They're a beauty to behold.
I won't buy $55,000 headphones, but I'm ashamed to admit, $1,000 on my Hi-Fi Man Electra.
Those Hi-Fi Man, which are also electrostatic.
Yeah.
Fabulous. Oh, yeah.
They sound really good, and that's as far as I'm going. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. If you have questions, comments, suggestions, if you want to talk high tech, I'm here for you. I'm here for Paul in Columbus, Ohio. He's our next caller. Hi, Paul.
Good evening. Afternoon.
Hey, how you doing?
Well, pretty good. Hey, I've got an old Dell XPS Core 2 quad computer. It's done well up until the last year or so, and I could reinstall Windows 7 and all that wonderful stuff, but it's still getting kind of old. And I've been looking at the considering this. I looked at a new XPS for about under $1,000. Could go a little cheaper, but for some stuff decent, it looks about $1,000. And then I was thinking, well, maybe I really would like to go with an iMac and then look at the range of those from the Mini all the way up to the 27-inch 5K and all that. And I like the idea of being able to run both operating systems, and you've always said that
Mac's the only machine that can do that,
Yeah, exactly, and the Macs are also the best Windows computer out there.
Give credit to Walt Mossberg, who was writing for the Wall Street Journal when he said that.
But exactly.
I think that's fair, yeah.
So, you know, it's like, with the, do you have any idea, I mean, based on their previous scheduling of this, when the new models of the, either the Mini or the iMacs might come out? I think we might be just in the middle of that range.
Yeah, you are. The Mini just got revved 6 months ago, and the new iMac just came out, literally. So you'd be safe to buy at this point.
What am I going to lose, like, with the middle-range Mini? I mean, I realize I've got to use my own monitor and all that. I'm not going to have the big 5K monitor or whatever. I can get a bigger, newer monitor otherwise, cheaper that I can get that. But, you know, is it...
The biggest thing you lose with the Mini, and I'm going to have to check to see, make sure I'm up to date on this, is a graphics processor. It uses, because of the size,
sure,
it has to use the built-in Intel graphics processing, which isn't bad these days, and it's not an issue if you're not a gamer. Let me just give you the specs here. I'll look at the let's look at the tech specs for the range of the Mini. They start, by the way, which is nice, at $499.
You're right,
and that's an i5, which is a pretty decent processor. If you go all, you know, you double that effectively to $1,000, you'll get a faster i5, although I think you could probably put a better processor in there. You probably get more memory, and, you know, more cache and that better, maybe a faster drive.
I think there was one about $700 that had them, that was between the middle.
Yeah, the mid one's the right one, by the way, because it has 8 gigs of RAM, which can be you can add more, which is nice. RAM is good. It's a little bit better motherboard graphics, not much. And I think it's actually a pretty decent system. You know, for $699, you get an i5, 2.6 gigahertz. You get a terabyte hard drive. It's kind of a slow drive. I think one of the things it's important perhaps to know about the Mini is because it has a Thunderbolt, actually two Thunderbolt ports, you could run an external drive that's just as fast, if not faster, than the internal drive.
Right.
So save your pennies on storage and get a good, fast external drive. You know, you can even get an SSD external drive. And that would, and you can boot from that and everything. So that, you know, maybe consider the internal drive to be your data drive and then boot to a faster external SSD, something like that. However, I think these are, you know, this is a fairly decent for $699. It's, you know, Apple charges a premium over over Windows machines.
Right.
But that's not a significant premium, especially if you bring your own keyboard, mouse, and monitor.
Yeah. Well, the biggest problem with the old XPS is it's one of the odd processors that can't upgrade to Windows 10, so that's a problem for me, too.
Oh, that's a bummer, isn't it?
Yeah, really a bummer.
Yeah, you should be able to run a Windows 10 on this without any problem.
Now, that was the other question. If I install Windows 7 on that machine, would that still see that and allow me to update to Windows 10?
As long as it's authenticated version of Windows 7.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. I have Windows running on an old Mac Pro because my son likes to play Windows games on Steam. And when I booted it up, and there it said, would you like Windows 10? I said, yes, sir.
Good.
I certainly would.
Great.
So I think a Mini is actually a very good choice, especially if you don't want to go all in on a Mac. I think it's a good way to go.
Well, it's great. It would be fun to have, but it's a lot of money.
Yeah.
27-inch screen, it was beautiful and all that. But, I mean, I'm not doing video editing or anything like that. Yeah. You know, it's just for pleasure and some modest work.
I like the Mini. I think it's an underlooked overlooked, it's either over or under, not sure which, model of Macintosh that's really pretty good. Could be used in a lot of cases. I have a buddy who buys Macs by the bushel. He does it in video production stuff, and he actually buys a lot of minis just and attaches them to the back of the screen. It's a poor man's iMac.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Cool. Well, one other thing real quick. I called in the other week. I had a problem trying to set up a router with a U-verse cable modem.
Yeah.
And what happened was, I was trying to find the bridge mode, and I couldn't get into the darn thing. Well, ended up, I called Amped wireless support. I didn't even, I was a second buyer of this thing from somebody that had it. They were fantastic.
Oh, that's good to know.
45 minutes with me walking through. And what it ended up to be was there is no bridge mode. You basically set it up as an access point. So you were just running from the cable modem, the U-verse gateway, from a LAN port into a LAN port on that modem, and then it recognized things in the way it had set up, so it works great. So,
Perfect.
I'm waiting to get with the Asus, but I thought that would give a little time for the price.
No, I think that's great. You got it, and it's working. Stick with it.
Thanks a lot, Leo.
Hey, it's good to talk to you. I'm glad to hear the update, too. That's always good. I make a note of those and remember that I don't have to do that anymore. All right. Ian is in Lakeview Terrace. Hi, Ian. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hey, Ian. How old are you?
I'm 11.
Nice. And you're a geek?
Mm-hmm.
Proud of you. Keep up the good work, Ian.
Thank you.
What can I do for you?
I have a question about my computer.
Yeah.
I installed a remote desktop application so that I could control my computer from my iPad.
Isn't that a great idea? I love that idea. Which one did you install?
It's from Splashtop.
Yeah.
And when I accessed my computer from my iPad, the screen went dark, then it came back on, and all the icons in the system tray were spread out.
Yeah, and this is one negative about doing this. The iPad has a different resolution. So what happened was when you started to use the remote access, Splashtop on your PC changed the resolution, and all the icons got mushed together, and then it changed it back when you took off Splashtop when you used the PC, and it spread them out again. And the problem is it didn't remember your old layout. This happens a lot. I've had this happen too. So what you need is a program that will help remember your layout. We're going to have to take a break, so I will have to do that when we come back. You don't have to hang on the line, Ian, but I'll give you some suggestions for a way to restore that nice setup you had. You put a lot of energy into it so that remote access doesn't mess it up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's cute. Scott Wilkinson. He's the star of the show. Scotty.
For the next 5 minutes.
I got this set up so you can see the clock.
Oh, excellent. Man, that clock was so good.
Isn't that handy? I'm sorry it broke on you. But
it did break on me once. Yeah, something happened. I have no idea what it was. But all of a sudden, John comes in and goes, I think we're off the air, when in fact we weren't. The clock said I had 150 seconds left.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there. That's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Kind of a weird one.
Yeah.
So here you go.
So what is the deal with this subsonic thing from Vizio? I have to check that out. Or it's not Vizio.
It's not Vizio. It's advertisers. So
it's advertisers.
It's on Ars Technica.
Oh, okay.
There's an article about it, and apparently there's an FCC investigation going on into it because.
Ooh, you know what? I'm going to have to look into that and write something.
Yeah, it's interesting. Ours quotes an amicus brief from the Center for what's it called? Here it is. Here's the article. Beware of ads that use inaudible sound to link your phone, TV, tablet, and PC.
How can you be aware of ads that use inaudible sounds?
Well, you can't.
Yeah, exactly.
So it has to be regulated out of business. The FTC scheduled a workshop on Monday to discuss the technology.
Mm. You know, this is very interesting because there's long been discussion about subliminal advertising and
right.
stuff that's too quick for your brain to pick up. And I maintain that that probably isn't very effective. But this is something that no one, your perception doesn't need. You know, they don't care if your perception picks it up. They don't want your perception to pick it up.
Yeah.
They want your cell phone or your tablet or whatever to pick it up.
No way to opt out of this. You know, it's an interesting. I don't know if they're if this is, you know, there's a lot of panicky stuff in the world. So I don't know how, if this is panicky or if this is really.
Yeah, or if this is, who cares?
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know.
It's TV audio, so it has nothing to do with the set you're using or there's no obvious way to fix it except regulate it away.
Mm-hmm.
All yours.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. So let's see. A Warcraft Hunter said, I bought an OLED TV from LG and I see this vignetting. Oh no. I thought the newer models fixed this. Can I get it to disappear if I lower the brightness? But I feel like I'm losing shadow detail. Sadly, you are. I thought LG had fixed it too. And I assume you bought it very recently. One thing to check is the date of manufacture on the back of the TV. There's usually a sticker on the back of the TV that says when it was actually made. And we saw this problem in June. So the TVs that were being sold in June had this problem. And what the problem is kind of a darkening of the left and right edges of the screen, of the picture, but only during what's called low APL, low average picture level, that is dark scenes. And not completely black, and if the scene is very bright, you don't see it at all, typically. But when the scene gets dark, like a nighttime scene or something like that, indoors where there's not a lot of light, you will see the edges of the TV getting darker. And we noticed that at the shootout in June. And LG, since when I saw them at Cedia just last month, I asked them, have you solved the problem yet? And they said, yes, we have. It was a panel problem, wasn't a firmware problem. It was actually in the panel, and we've solved that. So I took him at his word. And so if you haven't, Warcraft Hunter, if you still see that, you might have gotten one that was made before when they fixed it. I don't know. I must admit, I don't know the exact date or month of when they fixed it. But obviously, if my LG contact is to be believed, it was sometime between June and October. So depending on when that TV was made, it might have that problem. And if I were you, Warcraft Hunter, I'd probably take it back and get one that was made in the last month or two, if possible, because that should solve the problem. But it is a big problem. User 1531, I'm surprised reviewers don't test upscaling from cable boxes since most people view content by that. And we were talking in the chat room about how our review, AVS Forum's review of the Vizio M series, which was done by Mark Henninger, didn't test upscaling from a cable box because Mark Henninger doesn't have a cable box. He's a cord cutter. He's a member of a younger generation than me, and so he doesn't have a cable box. He just watches basically online, and I guess some over the air as well. So a lot of people use it. I'm not sure most people. I guess probably we could still say most people use cable. That's probably true, but the numbers are shrinking, as far as I know. So really what we're testing for is upscaling, whether or not the TV can do the upscaling. And somebody else in the chat room made a really great point, Rusty Bones, I think, that both the AVR and the TV can do the upscaling if you have a modern AVR. If you don't, you're not passing 4K content. Well, you could be. Anyway, bottom line is, if your AVR does 4K upscaling, then you want to see if that does a better job or the TV does a better job from any 1080p source, be it Blu-ray, be it cable, satellite, even streaming. I mean, you can get 4K streams, but most of them are still 1080p or less. So we test the upscaling overall. One thing to keep in mind is that cable signals are generally not really good. And if you upscale a signal that isn't really good, unless you have a super cool, great upscaler that does some fancy trickery, it's going to only magnify the problems that are in that image. So it's not the upscaler's fault, really. It's just upscaling what it's given. And unless it's a really good upscaler, you're going to amplify those problems and see them more, and hopefully you won't blame the upscaler. Well, the upscaler could be a problem, I suppose, but there are ways to test for that. But in any event, it's a bit of a tricky problem, and the answer is we don't. If a reviewer doesn't have a cable box, then they're not going to do that. Oh man, Warcraft Hunter! It was manufactured in September of this year. Oh, the newest 1080p model. Ah, interesting. I would have thought they would have solved that problem in the 1080p models as well as the 4K models, but maybe not. And if so, this is interesting information. I will talk to LG about it. But if it was made in September of this year, well, that's right on the borderline. Maybe they solved it, you know, in the October release. Hard to say, but this is a big problem. I would take it back myself. So I've only got about 30 seconds left. This has been a great time here. The amount of the amount of people that have cable or satellite, a lot hotter. Okay. Thanks, Leo.
Thank you, Scotty.
Have
a great
day.
Take care.
You bet.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, anything with a chip in it. 8888. Ask Leo, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. I guess we could talk about tablets, too. We talked last hour about this giant iPad Pro. I should probably qualify anything I say about the iPad Pro with the statement that while I have huge respect for the iPad, and I know many people, including my mom, who just, you know, devote, and my wife, who devotedly use their iPad, tablets in general don't really attract me. I feel like it's a middle category that I have less interest in. I love, you know, my computers. I was the computer guy, right? Until technology overtook computers. And I was very bullish on the iPad when I went to that first iPad announcement with Steve Jobs in 2010. I came out saying, this is the computer Apple has always wanted to make, has always was created to make the computer for the rest of us. And you've probably heard me recommend iPads a lot. But for me personally, I like either a laptop, and I love the new MacBook. It's thin, it's light, it's very portable, has a real keyboard. And for a lot of the rest of the stuff that probably most people do on a tablet, I just do on my smartphone because I have a 5.7-inch screen, not as big as a tablet, but big enough to do all the casual gaming, the browsing, the social media, the reading news, all of that. I do on my phone much more often than I do it on a tablet. So I have tablets. I even bought the new Kindle, the new Paperwhite that just came out, because occasionally I like to read in bed, and it's an easy way to read in bed, very light, unlike the iPad Pro. I don't think you'd ever take that to bed. That could cause an injury if you fall asleep and clonk. But a Kindle's light. It's easy to read in bed. It doesn't cast a lot of light, so it doesn't bother my wife's lying next to me. I understand the need for certain, you know, kinds of devices, but for some reason, as much as I like the tablet and like the idea of a tablet, for some people, it's just not for me. So there you go. Take my comments about the iPad Pro with a grain of salt. If you love the iPad, maybe you'll love it twice as much with a 12.9-inch iPad. I disagree with Apple strongly when they say that this is going to replace computing, you know, the computer. Golly, I mean, I need a computer for some things, for photo editing. I guess, you know, one of the things that the people are very excited about with this new iPad Pro is photo editing. And Adobe has jumped on the bandwagon, releasing a ton of apps dedicated to this giant screen. their Lightroom app is, you know, for photographers, probably a great way to kind of quickly review and discard and even do a few little adjustments to photos. I'm going to have to maybe I'll get used to it. Maybe I will get used to it. I don't know. We shall see. But for now, I feel like it's so honking big. I don't know. I wouldn't carry this in a briefcase. It's just too big. This is going to stay at home. So when do I use it? I'm sitting at a desk. I can use a full screen computer. I do like touch. You know, so maybe this is Apple's response to that, because I actually have been using my Surface Book a lot. The new Windows, Microsoft Windows 10 Surface Book is fabulous because it has touch and it has a pen and you can do stuff. But it's still a real laptop. What do you think? 8888 Ask Leo. Ian is next. Actually, we were talking to Ian. I'm sorry, Ian. Still on hold. What he's looking for is a way to maintain his desktop setup. Ian, you still there?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So did I diagnose it properly? Your desktop setup's getting all mushed up.
No. I actually kept the resolution when I turned on remote desktop.
Yeah?
But now it shows in control panel that my screen is a mobile PC display.
Ah.
It's not
even after you've disconnected SplashTop.
Yeah, and I even uninstalled the application.
And it still says that. Now, you know, by the way, Ian's 11, so he's obviously much more sophisticated about this stuff than you and I are. I hope I'm not patronizing you in any way, Ian, but you know that you can change the screen resolution and screen type in the desktop display settings, right? You're on Windows?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Have you tried that? Have you gone into the, settings for the display?
I'm actually in control panel right now.
Yeah, and in the display settings, you can change. I mean, that's how you know. Obviously, you're there. You wouldn't know what it thinks it's seeing. Can you change that?
No, I can't.
Is it blacked out?
No, it just shows like display, and then it says one mobile PC display.
Yeah.
And then there's another option that says available display output on Intel HD graphics.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah, that's the graphics card you're using. What you need to do is tell it what – is it a laptop?
Yes.
Yeah. You need to tell it that you're using the laptop screen now, not the remote screen. And that you'll be able to do – now, are you using Windows 8 or 10?
I'm using 10.
Yeah. So this is part of the confusion. Windows 10 has two control panels, one good one and one useless one. And you're in the useless one. You need to go into the – you know, not the one that looks pretty with the big letters. You can go in the one that looks like it used to look like. You probably don't remember this. What's the oldest computer you've ever used? Did you ever use Windows 7?
I used 7, and I also used XP.
Oh, yeah. Well, you want the control panel that looks like the Windows 7 or Windows XP control panel. And so you go into the settings there. You can also, you know, here's a shortcut. Let's eliminate this. Tripod, thank you. Windows key P. And then you should be able to choose the screen. I don't have a, here, let me get my Windows desktop here, or laptop. Windows key P. There's so many great shortcuts that are so useful to know involving the Windows key.
Okay, so it's actually selected to PC screen only.
Yeah. So what you let me open it on mine too. So that's actually right. It's not seeing a second screen, it's not extending or duplicating, it's seeing PC screen, huh?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So let's search for display settings, okay? In hit Windows key display settings. And this is the wrong one. Gosh, I wish Microsoft had not done this with the control panel. It's very confusing. Because one control panel has the capability of doing what you want to do. Yeah, display control panel. And, yeah. So, If you type display, you know, Windows key, and then type in display settings, you're going to get the nice, pretty control panel, which doesn't do what you want it to do. And then if you just type Windows key display and go to and pick that one, now you got the one that'll look a little bit like your old thing. And you should have a choice of displays there. If you don't, press detect and see if you can detect the display properly.
Okay, it says another display not detected.
Huh. Another display not detected. Well, maybe you have to go to advanced settings. Make sure that you're seeing the right graphics adapter, that you've got the right monitor set up. Ah, it's interesting. Splashtop sounds like it kind of confused your computer, and unfortunately, the settings stuck. I'm going to have to hold on for a second. You stumped me. You stumped me. Thank you, Ian. Hang on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you, Windows. Aye, yada. So now we're kind of on the air, kind of off the air here. But I'm still with you, Ian. So you've rebooted, obviously, since you uninstalled Splashtop, right?
Oh, yes. I actually rebooted before the show started.
Good man. And you see, and it's the built-in display. So you clicked advanced settings, right? And you went to HD graphics control panel. This is the Intel built-in graphics control panel. You should have one, I presume, unless you have an NVIDIA card. Do you have a graphics card in there?
No.
So you go.
I have Intel.
Yeah, Intel HD graphics control panel, and you should see display, and it should say built-in display.
It does.
Okay, good. And what's the refresh rate?
60p hertz.
Good, that's what you want. Scaling is maintain display scaling, right? All right. And you click OK and you're still looking weird?
Yes.
And you have it at the recommended display resolution?
1366 by 768.
Yeah. So what is the symptom? What is looking wrong on your screen? The icons are spread out.
The system tray icons. Everything else is just right.
Oh, it's the
system. Except for, I think it changed something in my computer settings because when I went into Adobe Reader, it showed that it said like mobile or like touchscreen mode activated automatically.
Yeah. Oh, now I know what it is. You're in tablet mode.
No, I'm not.
You sure?
I'm sure.
Okay. That would actually explain it. Windows 10 and Windows 8 have two modes, desktop and tablet mode. And in Windows 10, they've made it so that it will that you don't switch. But once you switch, you may have to manually switch back.
Yeah, I'm in the normal mode because I can see my desktop.
So, yeah, when you hit the Windows key, you get the start menu, not the big screen, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay, a couple of other things you can try. Something's wrong. You can uninstall the device driver and let Microsoft reinstall it. You can. Who made the laptop?
Toshiba.
You can go to the Toshiba site and make sure you have the latest display drivers. And you can also do a system restore. There'll be a system restore point before you installed Splashtop. You can try that. I don't know what Splashtop did. It sounds like Splashtop replaced the driver with its own driver. If you boot into safe mode, it probably doesn't do that. Dr. Mom's right. You'll get the VGA adapter. That you might have to do that to remove the whatever Splashtop installed. What a strange problem. I feel confident though, Ian. You're very smart. I'm impressed. I feel fairly
Thank
confident
you.
That you've done all the things I would recommend. But you understand what's happened, right? Yeah, Splashtop seems to have replaced your driver. So maybe just getting a replacement driver from Toshiba will fix that. Okay?
Okay.
Good luck. Nice to talk to you. Stay in touch, okay?
Okay.
All right. Take care.
Thank you.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo. I'm thinking I know why you faded that out really quickly, Nathan, but I'm not sure. I think you know the song better than I do. 8888, ask Leo. I talked with Ian off the air a little bit. Sounds like Splashtop, as some remote desktop applications do, installed its own driver on his Windows laptop. And that driver was not removed with the uninstallation of Splashtop. He needs to update his driver, either roll back drivers, remove the driver, the video driver, and replace it. Not an uncommon problem, but not a good thing for Splashtop to do. It has its own video drivers, which apparently were not properly uninstalled when he uninstalled the app. Glenn in Winnetka, California. I'm sorry, is that right? Yeah, Winnetka. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Glenn.
Hi, Leo. I'm looking for a lower-cost UPS unit that will work with today's computers. I've been buying low-end UPSs for decades, but now I hear they no longer work with the new computers.
Yeah, I think maybe a lower... So a UPS as opposed to a surge protector, it's a battery backup. The idea is if the power goes out, the UPS will run, not forever, but for long enough for you to properly shut down your system and avoid data loss because of a sudden, yank in power. Cheap UPSs are probably not a good idea. There'll be a brief interval where you don't have power, and that can actually cause problems. My recommendation is a company called Triplite. There's two companies really that dominate this industry. One is APCC. They make excellent stuff. The other is Triplite. And you're going to want to look for, as you say, one that is supports the current version of Windows. Probably look for a Windows 10 compatible. The software. The only reason the software matters is because then the UPS can signal your operating system. Oh, hey, we just lost power. Shut down. This is nice if you're not around. But you have to install special software to do that and so forth. It's my preference to, if you're going to use any UPS, which is, I think, a great idea, to spend a little money on it. And even consider, if you have a lot of electronics gear, getting a whole home UPS or at least a whole home surge protector. Those things are not as expensive as they might sound. A good electrician could put one in fairly inexpensively and then protect everything. Nowadays, we have so much electronic gear. Our home theater systems are sensitive to surges and brownouts just as much as our computers are. Charlie in Whitman, Massachusetts. Hi, Charlie. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Good afternoon. This is the Ted Williams guy.
The Splendid Splinter on the air.
Yes. I have a friend who has 3,000 songs on Windows XP. He put in he bought some CDs and he wants to put them in the car, and the car does not take CDs anymore. so now he wants to put them on a USB memory stick.
Sure.
128 memory stick.
Okay.
What I'd like to know from you, should he partition the memory stick before he transfers the music over to it, just so it saves it? If he's driving along and all of a sudden something happens to the radio, it doesn't crash. How do I stop that from...
Yeah, nothing you can do about it. Just make sure you have a copy of the song somewhere besides the UPS. I mean, the USB stick.
The memory stick is 128 gigs.
Yeah.
And it's approximately only needs is 10 gigabytes of space for the music.
Oh, well, get a smaller one then.
Yeah.
It was, or, the other thing you do is rip him at a higher quality.
I know it.
In fact, if I were him, okay, so here's the thing, really. Let's face it, CDs are not long for this world. So what I would do if I were him, you're going to do this, do it once, and don't rip them in MP3 or AAC at all, but rip them as FLAC. This is a compression format that doesn't lose any data, FLAC.
Okay.
And by ripping them in FLAC, you're essentially preserving the CD quality 100%. The problem with MP3, AAC, they rip little bits of the song out. You're actually not getting all the data that was on the disc. FLAC makes effectively an exact copy of the disc. So if you were to burn that to a CD, it would be identical to the original CD. Now, FLAC, that's while he's ripping. And by the way, iTunes will do this as they have Apple lossless. It's close enough. Any ripping program should allow you. That is, a ripping program is a program that copies a CD to the hard drive.
Yes.
Should allow you to do it in FLAC. That's what you want. And then once you have it in FLAC, it's probable that his car will not play back FLAC, unfortunately. I wish they would. But you could find out what the capabilities of the car are. Then you'll want to make a separate folder that's the FLAC files converted, and it's easy to do this and very fast, lots of software that will do it, into the highest quality MP3 he can make. Then put that on the USB key. Don't get a big one. Get a little one. He doesn't need the 200. I mean, I guess he already bought it, right?
Yeah, he already bought it.
That's fine. Yeah, there's lots of room for more.
The program that I used was Roxio Music Creator.
Okay. It should do FLAC, does it?
I'm not sure, to be honest with you.
So you already did it.
I burned them all on MP3s, so I said save on space.
He already did that. Yeah, well, you don't want to go back and do it again. But for future reference, that's what I would recommend. When you're taking, you got a library of CDs, it's not just your car. Computers don't come with CD drives anymore. Nothing comes with them. And you can see the writing on the wall. It's just a matter of years before you won't be able to play a CD back. But the good news is once it's in a FLAC format, you can do all sorts of things with it, including ripping burning another CD, if you wish, without losing any quality. So that's your archival storage is FLAC. Then you can convert it to a format that you can use in other places. I think it's a great idea. I actually bought, before they stopped selling them, the old iPod Classic. It was what was it, 160 gigs? Because I knew they were about to stop selling them. It's still a 30-pin connector, but, you know, a lot of cars, that's what they have. And I can connect it into my car, and my whole music collection is there. I don't think I'll ever run out of space on that. So that's, I think, a good way to go. My car also supports, believe it or not, SD cards. You can load an SD card up that doesn't have a USB port. That's part of the problem. Everything is a little different. We haven't solved this yet. So FLAC. FLAC is a good choice, FLAC. You may have to do an intermediate conversion, but at least you'll always have a master somewhere. And then back that sucker up. That's your CD collection. You know, that's everything. The nice thing is you can make copies, you can put some on the cloud, whatever, and never lose it. Unlike those CDs, which frankly wear out eventually, if nothing else. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. If you disagree or agree or you have comments to add, you can always call 8888-ASK-LEO. But don't forget we have a great website, techguylabs.com, techguylabs.com. And we put, as I'm talking, we'll put links up. You know, we actually kind of start filling that in. Thanks, James Gruvo, for doing that, filling that in. And then later we add the audio and the video of the show because we do record the video as well. Put that up there. And there's room for comments. So you can always go to techguylabs.com to see an answer. In fact, Chatroom has a great answer for Ian, the kid who's splashed up has a removal tool of all things. So we'll put that in the show notes. Techguylabs.com. Use that comment space. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. FLAC is the best choice because there are other choices, many other lossless choices, and you can always convert from one to the other. But FLAC seems to be the one to go with. I should have brought, and I didn't bring, the Surface Book with me. I did compare it when I first opened this up. It's smaller, of course. It's only a 12-inch screen, right? It's not 12.9. I like the Surface Book better. It's 3,000 by 2,000. Similar resolution, but not quite. It's like this has more dots in the. It's wider because it's not. It's 4.3 instead of 3.2, so it's wider. So it has more dots here. You know, you could just cut those off, but fewer dots there. Our show today brought to you by Prosper. Let me talk a little bit about them, and then Johnny Jett, travel guru, coming up in just a second. Prosper is such a good idea. You know, you've heard perhaps, it's been in the news lately, about peer-to-peer lending. It's a hot topic. A lot of investors are recommending it, saying it's a great way to make money. I'm not here to recommend it as an investment, but I'm here to tell you it's one of the very first, it's the first in the U.S. to do peer-to-peer lending, and it is the best way to get money when you need it at a low fixed rate. What Prosper does is they bring together people who have money to lend, investors, with people who want to borrow. And it just works great. You can find out right now how much you can get, up to $35,000 in 5 days, what your interest will be. If you go to prosper.com/techguy, that does not affect your good credit. You can use that money to just about anything. You could pay off the high-rate credit cards. That's a great use. You could fix up your house. You could plan a vacation. You could start a business. Prosper, P-R-O-S-P-E-R, .com. Go there right now, prosper.com/techguy, if you want to give us credit. I'd appreciate it if you do. At least check your rate. It will not affect your credit to do that. They don't ask a whole lot of questions. It's pretty straightforward. And you can see exactly how much you can get and exactly what your interest rate would be ahead of time. No obligation. Prosper.com/techguy. A great way to get cash when you need it. Quick. He's been everywhere. He's Johnny Jetman. Look at all that hair, man. No. It's the wrong song. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and Johnny Jet, our travel guru. Each week he joins us to talk about using tech for better travel. Just got off the plane from Miami. Were you there for fun?
No, I was actually hosting a Twitter chat from the new Norwegian Escape cruise.
Oh.
Ship.
Nice.
Which is a beautiful ship, and I had all this fun stuff planned for this week. Cool apps, but, you know, after yesterday's attacks, it's just, you know, I don't feel like talking about the fun stuff. And I just think, you know, right before I came on, I was like, you know, I should do a post on what to do if you're ever in a city where there's been a terrorist attack. And unfortunately, you know, that's happened to me a couple times. I was in Mumbai. Actually, I was in India, central India, when the Mumbai attacks happened. I was supposed to be at the Taj Hotel, which,
you're kidding,
you know, was one of the 36 hours later, I had a reservation.
Holy cow.
And then I was in New York for 9/11. And so, you know, I got a little bit of experience. You know, I was never in the mix of it. So,
well, let me say one thing up front. I think Facebook has really got a great solution.
And that's one of my tips.
Yeah. Well, go ahead and talk about this.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, the first thing you have to do is try and remain calm, which is, you know, easier said than done.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you're in the mix of it, you know, it's impossible. But, you know, if you're in a city and it's not where you are, just, you got to relax and, you know, stay somewhere safe. You know, usually wherever you're in a hotel or wherever you are, you know, stay safe. And then, you know, contact your loved ones. And Facebook has a really good tool where, you know, it knows where you are if you checked in there. And all you have to do is, I guess, where I hear from my friends is, you know, click a button saying that you're safe. And that way, you know, you don't have to go answering everybody who's calling you or emailing you or whatever. And they can just log on there. I mean,
Facebook knows you are there. They will even send you a text message because sometimes, of course, you're not going to log on to Facebook. Right. So they'll send you a text message and they'll say, are you okay? Let your friends, loved ones know. You say yes. And then when they log in, there'll be a list. And I saw this list of friends in Paris, as many of us did, that says they're okay. And it's so reassuring, although it's a little spooky and scary when you don't see somebody's name on there.
Right.
So, but don't assume anything. That just doesn't mean that, that just means the text didn't get to them or they don't have a phone
or number. Or they have to at least check into Facebook or at least have their location as Paris.
Facebook has to know they're there. You're right.
But if you're traveling, let's say I'm in Paris, you know, and
you
I posted
not.
A photo.
Right.
So that's what I am not quite sure.
What I thought
of.
Was interesting is if Facebook will actually send you a text message if you have a cell phone on record with Facebook, knowing that you may not log in. They have to know you're there, though. You're right. So you will have had to somehow indicate that you're there.
Right. So
there was also an issue because they closed the borders, right? So there were people who had just arrived. There were people who were arriving, couldn't get in. And there were people who were there who couldn't get out.
So I've heard conflicting reports. I heard they closed the borders. You know, some say it was just the roads because the airports, you know, as far as I know, stayed open and the trains are still going and the ferries are going.
Okay, that's good. Okay.
So I think – I don't know if it was just the road borders or what, but
– Parisians, you know, were opening their homes. It was really kind of amazing. The hashtag Paris Ouvert. They were opening their homes to people stranded in Paris overnight. So
Yeah, when these things happen, it's the worst and the best of times. I mean, in New York, 9/11, you've never seen, you know, the country come together. It was, you know, there's no political parties. There's nothing. No. Everyone, it was
it's a good thing to remember, isn't it?
For sure. And and so another website, by the way, the government, the U.S. government, if you're a U.S. citizen, there's a they have a program called Smart Traveler Enrollment Program, and it's shortened for STEP, S-T-E-P. So before you travel, you can, you know, register if you feel comfortable of where you're going. And that way, if anything ever goes, you know, happens something like this or a natural disaster, they know how to get in contact with you. So, you know, they can.
Yeah, step.state.gov.
It's a free service, and it's for U.S. citizens.
This is, I've never used this, but I will use this now. That's good when we travel, yeah.
Some people are against it. Some people say that, you know, if something goes wrong, the U.S. embassy is usually the first one to close their doors. You know, one of my buddies who's a travel expert says he always goes to the Canadian embassy because they'll open it up for you. So, which I, you know, fortunately, I've never had to run to an embassy like that. So I don't know if that's true, but you can always keep that in the back of your mind.
Oh, I'm sure the Canadians wouldn't turn you away. They're very nice people.
Well, I married one, so.
We love Canada.
And I was in the U.S. Embassy a couple of weeks ago in Bangkok. You know, it's just their security is insane. You can't even bring your cell phone in there. You have to check your cell phone. You're not allowed to have multiple devices. They will not let you even check them.
You should see the Paris Embassy, American Embassy. It is remarkable.
Right.
They're very and I understandably, especially after Benghazi, they're very concerned about security. But my ex-wife lost her passport, and we had to go to the U.S. Embassy in Paris. And that is intimidating. It's like going to Fort Knox.
For sure.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. You're not even allowed to take a picture of the Paris U.S. Embassy.
No.
So anyway, also, you know, a lot of people, if you don't feel comfortable traveling to Paris, or if you want to come home early, most airlines and trains, whatever, will waive the change fees. And this happens, you know, wherever, or they'll give you a refund. So always keep that in mind. I also always, you know, I always recommend buying travel insurance. And this is before Allianz Travel Insurance has sponsored, you know, my website. But, you know, always get I always have a travel insurance. That way you have a backup in case, you know, the airlines are not waiving things and things like that, or covering hotels, because I wouldn't. Good in travel insurance would. So, you know, I always have travel insurance. And what I also like to do is I also cross-reference other English-speaking government websites. So, you know, look at Canadians' warnings, or Australia's or UK's, for whatever country or city you're traveling to. And you know, I'm going to make a post on this, so I'll have all those links, so you don't have to go digging for them. I'm about to go digging for them. And then, you know, in 9/11, everything went down in New York, you know, all the cell service, all the phones. So back then, we didn't have apps like FireChat where you could, you know, you could, or Jot where you can work, you know, or at least contact people who were nearby, you know, just using your the mesh technology, which you would know more about than I would.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great app. Probably a good idea to have that app, isn't it? Just in case. You never know when you're going to need it.
And but your loved one's going to need to have it too.
Yeah.
And they need to be close by. Well, the Fire Chat app says it will work if there's a lot of people on it, but you know, I've used it just to talk to, you know, Natalie, you know, nearby, but it was never you know, far away. And I know people do it at rock concerts where they, you know, turn off the cell service and all that stuff. So, I mean, that's about it. I mean, I'm about to go do some research. I'll find some more apps and websites to use. I just came up with this idea right before I went on, so I just think it's important.
Thank you. I appreciate you doing that. Yeah, and as we mentioned, you know, our hearts go out to everybody in Paris and all over the world. People suffering from this ISIS and.
You know, you can't let these guys win. I mean, nope. I'm a lover and not a fighter, but I'm honestly ready to go fight. And but I'm not going to keep traveling the way I travel. I'm not going to let these guys scare me. And I'm going to be in Paris in a couple of weeks. So,
yeah, that's the other thing. We should all go to Paris. We shouldn't stop. It shouldn't stop us. I'll be in Paris next fall.
It's one of my favorite cities.
Well, as I said at the beginning of the show, I think we often consider it the capital, the world's capital. It is more than just a French city. It is our city, you know.
Yeah.
All of our city, like New York. Thank you, Johnny Jett. People should go to johnnyjett.com. There's lots of great information there. Don't forget his newsletter, which allows you to get great travel deals for no cost. The deals cost you a little bit, but the newsletter's free. You can also follow him on Twitter, at Johnny Jett. Instagram, too. I love your Instagram pictures.
You.
And I look forward to seeing you head out and hit the road once again. Thank you, Johnny.
See you next week.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Yeah, a lot of people on Facebook and Twitter changing their avatars. That's become the one way for the community to kind of make a statement. It's just put the French flag over your face. Facebook makes that very easy to do. They have a little tool that you just go. In fact, let me find the link for you so I can put that in the show notes. You can go and change your face to the French flag if you want. It's interesting to see that, though. And in a way, you know, people mock it. Say, oh, yeah, the cause of the month on Facebook. But at the same time, it's kind of a great way for a community to show their support. A simple, easy way to show your support. And when it does have an impact, when you see all of your friends and family, you know, all showing their support, there's something about it that I think is great. 8888, ask Leo, the phone number. Wayne is in Decatur, Georgia, our next caller. Hi, Wayne.
Hey, good afternoon. How we doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing fine. Listen, I got a Gateway computer that I put away when I found out I could use the one at work and the one at college. And so I wanted to get it back out. It's a Gateway 700S PC.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got the mid-tower case. And I'm being told that it's no longer any good. So I was wanting to find out, is it?
Well, now, did you drain the oil and put it up in blocks before you put it away for the summer?
No,
I'm just kidding. You don't.
Same box and the plastic and all that it was packed in.
That's fine. Have you tried it? Have you turned it on?
No, I've been thinking about it, but I thought I'd ask before I got it out, you know.
Yeah, I don't think that, well, it's certainly not going to do any harm to turn it on. It's probably running XP, I would think, yeah?
Yeah, I was looking at my sales acknowledgement. It had Microsoft Windows XP Home downloads.
Yeah.
And then Microsoft Windows XP Home Edition.
Yeah, that's fine. The reason people are telling you, oh, you shouldn't use that, is not that the hardware is broken or worn out. In fact, it's probably as good as new almost.
Yeah.
The only thing that wears out on computers are moving parts, things like the keyboard, the mouse, the hard drives. But those are easily and nowadays relatively inexpensively replaced. The solid-state stuff usually survives a long time. Maybe the power supply, that's another part that can wear out. Again, easily and inexpensively replaced. The real issue is Windows XP, and that's why your friends are saying, oh, no. Microsoft stops updating Windows XP in April. All that means is that if security flaws are found, they won't be fixed. But there are some sensible, safe ways to use XP. Or you can always upgrade it. You know, you can get a copy of Windows 7, which should run fine on that thing. It really depends on the age. How much RAM does it have? Do you know?
It had 256 MB of RD RAM.
There's your problem right there.
The 800 memory.
Yeah. Okay. So that's very low nowadays. Very low.
It was the top then.
Sure was.
Because, see, Leo, what I bought it for, as my college teacher told me, I do a lot of CNC drawings.
Yeah.
And you had to do a lot of drawings. And then it would give, on that program, MasterCam, it would give line-for-line programming.
Yeah.
So you had to have a lot of memory for the drawings because
yeah,
you drew a lot of them.
Yeah, but 256 megabytes nowadays, that sounds like a lot. Most computers come with 4,000 megabytes nowadays.
Wow.
And that's considered by some to be too low. If you were doing 3D design, you'd probably want 8,000 or 8 gigabytes. Compared to 256, that's you're pretty light on the RAM, and that's going to limit what modern things you can do with that. That computer ran Windows XP, so you know it can continue to run it. It's a Pentium 4; it's going to be very slow. It is a dinosaur. It may be adequate for simple things, but I think you'd probably be better off. You certainly don't want to put any money into it. I think you'd probably be better off going out and getting an inexpensive modern Windows computer. It'd be 20 times faster and more usable. And there are certainly choices, you know, the HP Stream and choices like that that are $200. A Chromebook, if you can live with just having the browser, it's not going to help you with 3D design, but a Chromebook's also just a few $100. You can get a very decent Windows machine for $500 to $600. And I think you'd be much safer, much better off. If you want to, I'm not so worried about the Windows XP as I am about the 256 megabytes of RAM. That is so light that you're pretty much stuck. You're not going to be able to run a modern browser. And that means you're going to be much more vulnerable because as bad as XP is, Internet Explorer is worse. You can run Internet Explorer 8 on Windows XP, but I don't think you can run that on that machine, which means you're really stuck. You certainly can't run Chrome or any modern browser on it. I think it's not something you'd want to put on the Internet. It's something you could play limited games on. But sad to say, it's probably fine. That's the sad thing. You know, this stuff doesn't wear out, but time has left it in the dust. So my strong recommendation is, you know, Black Friday's coming up. You're going to get some amazing deals on PCs. Almost anything you could buy for a few $100 will be better than that. Certainly wouldn't put any money into replacing any pieces or parts of it. Just not worth it. Peter in Brooklyn's next. Hi, Peter. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
How are you?
I'm good, buddy. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. What's up?
Yeah, but I'm having a problem with my Mac Pro, late 2013.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I it's a 6-core. I got 48 gigs of memory.
Oh, wow.
And the problem I'm having, really, it happened maybe about a week ago.
Yeah.
All the time, it starts beach balling, I guess you can say. It's freezing up.
Yeah.
And the only way I can get it to stop is if I reset, pull the power button.
You know, I found these are those beautiful, shiny, black cylinder Mac Pros. I find they make excellent door stops. A little pricey. I think, and I don't think Apple's admitted this, but I think this is a lemon. I think they're lemons. So one thing I'd try is disconnect all your USB devices. Mine, I've had two of them, and both of them, the USB chain kept falling apart. There was something wrong with USB on them. And I don't think Apple really is acknowledging this problem, but I do feel like there's they didn't sell very many. So, in fact, I went to the Apple store the other day, and among all the iPhones, the brand new iPad Pros, the beautiful iMacs, they had one Mac Pro over in the corner, one. They were practically using it for a doorstop. I think that should tell you something. They're not trying to sell this product.
What I did? I don't mean to cut you off, but I had three external hard drives hooked up at once. So now that you say like the USB thing, I thought maybe it was the operating system because I had Yosemite on it before. And then I formatted it this week as well and put, a copy time on it directly as a clean install. But I had the three externals. One was 3 terabytes, one was 5 terabytes, one was 4 terabytes.
You can refresh, zap the RAM. You can also refresh the USB controller. There are techniques to do this. We'll put these in the show notes. I did it over and over again. You can replace the operating system. I did that over and over again. I finally decided the thing is a lemon. I'm not saying yours is, but try these techniques, these methods to zap the RAM, and I can't remember what it's called, the USB controller that you can zap that as well to kind of, refresh it, restart it. It's, what they say to do is you unplug everything, you let it sit for a while. That's how you refresh it. Plug it in again. You put the new operating system on. Of course, you've been applying all the updates, the firmware updates. I don't know what to say. I'm surprised there's not a hue and cry. I feel like this thing is a lemon. I notice Apple's dropped the price and isn't trying to sell them much anymore either. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet and home theater, digital photography, and all that jazz. 8888, ask Leo. If it's got a chip in it, I would love to talk to you about it, even if your light bulbs are buzzing. That was our first call of the day. 8888 Ask Leo. The old geek's on the line from the Bronx. Hey, old geek.
Hey, vive la France.
Vive la France.
Yeah.
Usually I say that with a smile and a lift to my step, but today we say it in all seriousness.
Right. So I recently had the major update to Windows 10 pushed to me.
Yep.
And a couple of strange things. You came on, according to my computer, at 1:06.
That's right.
When usually my local time is 2:06.
Oh, it's got the wrong time zone.
Exactly. And they made it a little more difficult to correct that, because usually you could click on the time and get the adjustment right there. But it was grayed out, and I had to go to settings and find an advanced settings feature for the time. But
I'm looking at it. It doesn't look that hard. I click the time, and then there's a, you know, it gives me a calendar, and then I, at the bottom, it says date and time settings, which is kind of a logical place to put it. So I click date and time settings, and that opens up the date and time control panel. And right there it says time zone, and you just pick your time zone. Now, you may have time zone set automatically, and that may be part of the problem. I've turned that off on mine, and that's trying to base its time setting on information it gets from usually from Wi-Fi, because you don't have GPS usually.
Yeah, no, I don't have location.
Yeah, so I turn that off and just manually choose the right time. Also, make sure you click that box that says adjust for daylight saving time.
Right.
They still observe that in the Bronx, right?
Yeah, we still do.
Haven't seceded from the union. All right. Yeah, this is kind of annoying. But one of the things that's annoying is that Windows 10 puts everything kind of in a different spot.
Yeah.
And then I really don't like, and I mentioned this earlier, I don't like the fact that there are double control panels. There's like the serious Windows 7 style control panel, and then the light and lively Windows 8, 10 style control panel, which doesn't do any of the things you want it to do, but it's friendlier.
For the sake of clarity, you know, they eliminate things that tell you what the icons represent. But the other thing is, when I did click on the app for settings, I just get the tile, and it does a little jig from side to side. Since I have split screen, you know, I have you playing and the chat room split on the other side. And it didn't open until I realized if I drag it to one side or the other, it would then open up in that half screen.
How long have you had Windows 10?
I've been using it since it was pushed out back
July 29th. Yeah. 9th. So you still, basically what you're saying is, I don't like it and I'm not used to it.
No, I love it, and I try to sell it to all our members who look to me for technical advice. But,
It's just, you know, I feel your pain.
Recovery. Yeah.
It's better than, did you go through the Windows 8 period?
Oh, yes.
That was a nightmare. You didn't know where anything was. I feel like Windows 10 is much improved in that regard. You know, it's a little more discoverable. That's the word I like to use. You know, there was a lot of stuff in Windows 8 you couldn't discover. You'd have to find a guy like you and say, hey, how do I shut this thing down, for instance?
Exactly.
And then go, oh, no problem. You go Windows key X, and then you click the shutdown thing, and it's right there. It's like, I never, what?
Yeah.
How am I supposed to know that? Well, it's somewhere hidden in some help file somewhere. But I'm with you. This is challenging. But it sounds like you're kind of – I like Windows 10. I'm kind of mastering it. I'm going with you wherever there's – we have to learn new places to find stuff. Like our 11-year-old Ian, who was baffled.
Oh, he's great.
Yeah. But isn't he amazing?
Oh, yeah. We have some sixth graders that we have intergenerational programs with, and they're helping us with our newly acquired iPad.
Oh, isn't that... Now, what are you working with older folks, or...?
Yeah, primarily at our senior center.
That's
and
so great. That's so great.
Yeah. And that's how I learn all.
Oh, yeah. Every teacher, every good teacher will tell you this. I learn as much as I teach.
Exactly.
If you're a good teacher, you're learning from your students all the time. In fact, I learn more from doing this show than from all the research that I do during the week. This show, people often say, how do you stay up on this stuff? I say, well, I do a radio show, and people ask me questions, and I go, I don't know, and find out.
Yeah, and I tell them, I watch the tech guy and
great.
All the Twitch shows that he has on his network.
That's awesome. Well, I'm really glad. I'm glad you're doing what you're doing. Keep up the good work. You don't really. I mean, you figured out how to get this working, right?
Yes, and you know, more than that, I wanted to see if other people were experiencing it also.
Well, yeah. I think it's mostly user interface, you know, difficulties. It's just hard to. Get you well. This Windows Snap, this split screen thing, it does change how things work, and it's a little tricky. I wish there are some books. David Pogue wrote his missing manual for Windows 10. David's usually pretty good about this. The Head Start guides are very good because they have lots of pictures. I like pictures when I'm learning how to use something. I want to see it.
Yeah, and Paul Thurrott.
Paul is the best, isn't he? Do you read his website?
Yes.
Yeah, I wouldn't refer your students there because it's for advanced geeks. But he's great at and you know what? Paul's a realist. He understands that, you know, Microsoft did this nutty, but here's how you do it. He's not a cheerleader, and I appreciate that. Because I think people who love Windows, and there are lots of them, sometimes, same thing with anything, will overlook the challenges. Same thing with Apple. They overlook the challenges that the operating system might present to a normal person. They go, well, that's just Windows. Well, yeah, but it could be, shouldn't it be easier? No, it's just, you know, it's not that hard. You'll figure it out.
Yeah, I just helped somebody with his computer, which just wouldn't respond. And what it turned out, I believe it was that he shut down while this update was being pushed.
Oh, yeah, of course, that's the worst thing you can do. Yeah.
And then to find a way to shut it down without the power off button was challenging.
I bet that's the first thing you have to teach people is, because on a TV set, you're watching a show, you're done, you turn it off, right? You press the off button. You don't really want to do that with a computer. You want to shut it down. And we have to learn that. And that's a whole different, longer process. I actually just leave everything on all the time. That's the new normal, isn't it? Just leave it on. It'll kind of go into a low power state. And that's the best thing. But at the same time, everybody says, and I agree, you got to reboot once in a while. Prophylactically, you want to restart the whole thing. So I don't shut anything down, but every once in a while I'll reboot. Fortunately, with Windows 10, there are enough updates now that force a reboot. You probably don't have to do it manually. Just let Microsoft make you do it. Hey, old geek, great to talk to you. Keep up the good work. And yes, you're not alone. We all share these frustrations. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. No, the Mac's not intuitive either, I don't think. I think it's just it's intuitive because you know. But if you put a, you know, alien in front of any of these things, they're all going to seem like, what? You do what? You win? How? Hey, our show today brought to you by Epson. I'll tell you what's intuitive. The box comes with 2 years of ink. The printer is ready to print for 2 years. We're talking about the new Epson EcoTank printers. With this line of super tank all-in-one printers, you can print thousands of documents without running out of ink. I love this. Take a look at the new EcoTank ET4550. It's a wireless all-in-one printer. It doesn't use ink cartridges. Instead, it has an innovative refillable ink tank. It makes you wonder, you know, where have you been all my life? I love you, Epson. I've been using Epson since the very beginning, and I love them. My first Epson was an MX-100. Remember those dot matrix printers with the that you'd rip, burst and decollate the, well, then we come a long way, baby. This new EcoTank Epson ET4550 uses the Precision Core technology, 40 million drops of ink a second. It's not only is it quiet, it prints a whole page in about 2 or 3 seconds. It goes, it's done. It's done. You're getting, in the box, 11,000 black pages or 8,500 color pages, about 50 cartridges worth. And when you need more ink, you get ultra-low-cost replacement ink bottles. It's economical. It's convenient. It is so, so slick. Thank you, Epson, for the EcoTank printers. It's you get laser-quality black text, high-speed, vivid colors, two-sided printing. I love that. It really saves me paper. 30-page auto document feeder, easy wireless printing from tablets and smartphones. That's important nowadays, right? Half the time you're printing from a mobile device. And all the EcoTank printers deliver an unbeatable combination of convenience and value with ultra-low-cost ink replacement bottles. I love it. You will, too. Go to Epson.com/EcoTank today to transform the way your home, your office, or your work group prints. For the best combination of ease and value, turn to the new Epson EcoTank printers, EPSON.com/EcoTank. And we thank them so much for their support of the Tech Guys Show. Epson.com/EcoTank. Epson, exceed your vision. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number, and we got Karen on the line from Canyon City, Colorado. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Leo. Yes, I need a new cell phone plus a new inexpensive service to go with, so I really wanted to go with Project Fi. I received an invite.
Oh, good.
And I've been looking forward to getting one of the Nexus 6Ps, but now I saw so many great reviews. But now with the bending issues and the spontaneous cracking issues.
Yeah, don't, you know.
I mean, it's a lot of money for me to spend.
I understand. You might want to look at a 5X instead. That works with Fi. And I know a lot of people love the 5X. The only negative on the 5X, it's a little smaller. You might actually like it better. There's only three phones that work with Google's Fi. Fi is Google's really kind of innovative cell phone company. It's an MVNO. That means a mobile virtual network operator. They're reselling service from Sprint and T-Mobile. What's cool is it switches depending on whose signal is stronger. So that, I think that's great. That means you're going to have better coverage.
And that should help in the area that I live. Currently, yeah. I'm on Sprint, and it's kind of shoddy, but T-Mobile sometimes is a little better.
Yeah, see? So the ability, and, of course, it uses Wi-Fi as well. It has some nice – the billing system is very simple, $20 a month. That's unlimited voice and text. And then you'd pay $10 a gigabyte, period. And they even fractional amounts. And they and
right.
I've found it, it's very affordable. When you need a lot of data, you might be spending $70 that month. But then the next month, you're spending $30. And it, I think that's great.
I use less than two, so.
It'll be $40 a month.
I'm on Wi-Fi most of the time.
Yeah, me too. Right. So I think in every respect, Google's trying to, as it has done with their gigabit internet service, trying to kind of nudge the carriers into a better model. You pay outright for the phone, although they have a payment plan as well. But the phones are more affordable, and I think they're nice because they're pure Android. Have you used Android phones before?
I use Android, never a pure
Good.
Android.
But good. You'll like this. You'll like it.
HTC.
Yeah, you know, a lot of, we make fun of, we mock, we deprecate the manufacturer's additions to Android, but not all of them are bad. Some of them are very nice and useful, and so there may be some things you may start using Marshmallow and say, oh, where's that? You know, I miss my whatever, but you'll get used to it. Marshmallow is a very nice, clean, simple operating system. Let me say something about, though, there have been reports of spontaneous cracking of the glass in the back and of bending. Remember,
right.
There is a lot in the tech press that is sensational. And the reason is that most of these blogs want you to click. And so they're going to give you something we call link bait, which is, you know, and it could be a blog or it could be a YouTube video. The bender is a YouTube video. That guy went through a lot of work to get this to bend. Unless you plan on sitting on your phone, which I wouldn't recommend. It's not going to bend. It's not like a...
I'm not really worried as much about that because I always make sure I have a good case.
And if it's...
I drop my phone at times.
Yeah, if it spontaneously cracks, Google will replace that. You know, if there's a problem, they will. I have had my 6P for a couple of weeks. I know people have had it for more than a month. Don't know anybody, literally anybody who's had any problem with that back glass cracking. Now, I would get a case. I carry mine in a spec case, which Google sells. They also have another case that looks like a little woolly mitten. Depends, you know, that's just a matter of taste. But the case will protect you against accidental damage, I think, for the most part. And it does, in fact, cover up most of that back glass, so nothing's going to hit that. The camera and the flash obviously have to be uncovered. I would look at the 5X. The big difference on the 5X, besides screen size, is battery life. It's not, the battery life is not as good. But both of them support.
I do like a big phone.
Oh, well, then get, you know.
Your eyes aren't as,
I'm with you. I know. I only use big phones. And this is, what's nice about this is a 5.7-inch screen, but it doesn't feel really like a big phone. I think they've done a nice job of making it very usable. It does charge super fast, which I really like. You can get a full charge in about an hour using this Type-C charger. That's the other thing, is you'll have to get new cables.
Right, that's kind of a pain. But
yeah.
They say most phones are going to, from what I've read, most phones are going to go to that eventually.
I think so. This is the future, and there's a lot of things, good things to say about Type-C, including the fact that you could put it in backwards. There's no right way to put it in. It's much more solid in there. It doesn't fall out. You can hold the phone by the cable. It's not going to fall out. I just think they've done a nice job with that. So all around. So I certainly have no hesitation. I would not be suckered in by sensationalism on the part of the tech blogs. I don't think there's a bending or crazing problem. I think that that's just a great way to get lots of traffic, frankly.
And the cameras?
Camera's superb. Very happy with the camera. I had some problems early on. I think I had an app on there that was using up a lot of CPU cycles. I do notice that it can get busy, but every smartphone can get busy and then less responsive when it's busy. I took that app off. I haven't had any problems since. I really like this phone. I warm up to it.
Now, right now my phone only has 8 memory, and I know not enough for anything, and that's part of my issue.
Yeah, you need a bigger phone.
Go from 32 or 64?
32 probably enough for you. If you've been used to getting by with 8, unless you put a lot of music on it.
Oh, I've had to delete almost everything.
I know. You can't take pictures.
I have to keep deleting stuff because I can't even do updates for like Facebook or anything. So.
Since cost is an issue for you, 32 would probably be fine. I got the 64. But I haven't come anywhere near to filling it up, and I've put a lot of audiobooks and music on there. Let me just see how much storage I've used up. I'll give you – this might reassure you a little bit that 32 is probably adequate. I have 64 gigs on here, and I've used 10. So okay. That's with all my apps, all my images, all – you know, I've been using it pretty heavily. I've only used 10, so – that means I have 53 free. I think 32 would be plenty.
Okay, that's good.
That'll save you $100? $50, maybe 50. $50.
Yeah. And that's why I didn't know if it was worth going to 50. I do keep my phone for a while. So.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a phone you can keep for 3 or 4 years. The Nexus 5, which is 3 years old, people still use and love, and I think this is a better phone. I've been very impressed. And I do think you'll like Project Fi. I've been very happy with it. This is also a Project Fi phone.
Now, what if, I mean, because with them going with Wi-Fi a lot, like if you go into a restaurant or store or something, then they automatically go to Wi-Fi. But do you have to, like a lot of places you go, you have to accept the Wi-Fi?
But they won't do that unless you've accepted the Wi-Fi. I have not had a problem with that at all.
Okay. Because I know sometimes that can be a pain.
Yeah, no.
You can't get to the right website.
Xfinity has put Wi-Fi everywhere. You know, if you get an Xfinity Wi-Fi adapter, then all of a sudden you're part of their public network.
Yesterday.
Yeah, I turn it off because so many of them don't have access. It's just a pain.
Yeah, I don't have Xfinity, but it just kept popping up.
Yeah.
Couldn't get rid of it.
Yeah, forget that network. That's my first advice. Yeah, I can wholeheartedly recommend this. Yeah, I like it, the 6P. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. To Billings, Montana we go. Hello, Ludlow.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm great. How are you?
Great. Very cool. Hey, here's my issue, and I have zero technology skills. I can run the programs on my computer. That's about it. But the issue is this.
That's probably all you need to do, but okay.
Yeah, well, for my job anyway, yeah. So my mother's 97.
Wow,
and I live in Montana. My sister lives across the street, and my other brother is in D.C. So she's in fairly decent good health, except she had a fall a couple weeks ago, and so now things are a little some issues. And my sister now feels obligated. She quit her job and feels obligated that she has to stay in my mom's house 24/7 and can't go anywhere. And so I drove 10 hours last night, kind of sat around today and kind of assessed things. Is what it's doing is it takes her quality of life down, and it takes, I think, my mother's quality of life down. Now she feels that she's a burden, and then my sister feels that, well, I can't go anywhere.
Right.
So I don't want mom walking around the house and falling down. So, and I know I need to take baby steps alleviating that concern for my sister, but I guess what I was looking at, I have a friend that has a cabin, and the way he monitors his cabin during the year is he's got one of those little, it kind of looks like it's a white thing that you stick on, and it's got a 360 camera that bounces around, and he accesses it from his computer, and so therefore he can kind of look around the cabin and see what's going on outside and stuff. So I guess my first thought was, is there something you can mount that is motion censored where
all of them are?
It would be a camera.
Yeah.
And so now my mom, let's say my mom's roaming around the house, and it's not that she has dementia or anything, but, you know, she's 97, you know, she does do some things that are kind of like, oh, what are you doing? So that would give my sister some relief where all of a sudden now she gets an alert on her phone. She has a smartphone, and she can kind of monitor it and draw it up, and then maybe some of us, other siblings, can access it and, you know, where we kind of take a look around the house just to make sure from a distance we can keep an eye on things that, you know, so that, I don't know, it gives...
Let me make a couple of suggestions.
Everybody a little cushion of flexibility.
I understand you're looking for kind of a nanny cam for, or maybe we call it a granny cam for mom.
Yeah,
that's one solution. Let me tell you about another one. I'll tell you two answers to this. One is a new product that I think is really interesting for parents, for people with older parents who are trying to keep an eye on them without intruding. I mean, one of the problems with a nanny cam, and maybe your mom doesn't care, but one of the problems with a nanny cam is this sense, or a granny cam, is this sense of being spied on. And some elders don't really like that idea.
Right, right.
So I interviewed some time ago a guy who created a product called Lively, and you can find it at
mylively.com.
And it's kind of a nanny cam for adults who don't want to be monitored particularly, but it helps you. Well, for instance, it could tell you how often she opens the fridge, whether she's taken her meds. She can wear a little wristwatch that will tell you how many steps she has taken remotely, but also if she's moving around, there's a button on it she can press, kind of a medic alert or a life alert button where she can get help immediately. It's a really interesting product.
Great. That's exactly kind of stuff I've been, I told my sister, I said, you're handcuffing yourself with all this technology. There's got to be something that
this doesn't even, by the way, require Wi-Fi in the house. This has its own cell built in, so you don't have to get Wi-Fi in her house. If you wanted to do cameras, you would have to now set her up with an internet connection. I don't know.
Right, which she has.
Okay.
So, I mean, so it's called My Lively, right?
MyLively.com. There, you know, it's not too expensive. There is a monthly fee because it's monitored. I think it's a really interesting solution, and you should at least look into it. And then, of course, there are products like the Nest Cam. This is made by Google's Nest division that are Wi-Fi cameras. The problem is you'd have to put it all over the house, right? And well, she may start to resent these eyes in the corners of the room that are looking at her all the time. I know I would.
Yeah, I would too. I was kind of thinking, you know, I mean, mostly because, of course, I'm 58. I mean, when I was growing up, split levels. Everybody had to have a split level.
Right.
So, yeah, no more ranching. Yeah. Everybody has
By the way, level, so. I'm 58, and the house we just bought a year ago, flat.
One, yeah, exactly.
One story, flat. I'm ready to wheel my way around that house. That's the last house I'm buying. But anyway, yeah, so there's a lot of issues, and certainly this is one place I would start was mylively.com. I don't have any interest in this, but I did interview the guy who created it. They started it with a Kickstarter campaign. And I think it's a really interesting idea because he said our goal was to create something that people didn't, that elders didn't feel was intrusive, and yet would allow us to keep track of, you know, if they're moving around, if they're how many steps a day they're getting, if they're taking their medication. There's family alerts. There's a kind of an alert button she could press, and of course it's a relatively stylish looking watch. You have to enroll her. She has to say, yeah, I want to do this, and that might take a little work on your part to get her to agree to it. And so there are ways. In fact, they talk about this on the website to position it so that she doesn't feel like you're, you know, it's really just because she's incompetent and you're spying on her. It comes with a base unit that has 1,500 foot coverage, so pretty much would cover the whole home. You don't need to have Wi-Fi in there. I just think this is a really good and interesting idea. They come with special pill boxes too, so you can have different pill boxes, and you'll know, oh, she's taking her vitamins this morning. Oh, she's taking her medication this afternoon. You can know exactly without being there. You can literally be as you are, you know, back in Billings and know that mom has, you know, moved around. She's opened the fridge today. She's made herself something to eat. She's taking her pills without spying on her. Then if you want to go to cameras, there are lots of choices. They're all motion sensitive. You can put them up. As I said, the Nest Cam is a good example. They'll do what you want, which is only record when there's motion, or you can actually have them turn on when you go online to see what's going on. But you'd have to put one in every room, and that you know, that might be something that mom might not appreciate, and you may not want to spend the money for. But I think it would help your sister, at least the Mind Lively. I feel like this is a great intermediate solution. It's not overly intrusive. It kind of respects your mom, but also lets you have the information that you kind of want to have. You want to make sure she's taking her meds, that she's eating, that she's kind of moving around, that she's getting some steps in. I like this idea. 8888-ASK-LEO. I would love to hear from you if you've got a suggestion or a solution, something you've been using. That'd be great, too. Technology is here to help us. It's one of the things I like doing this show because I and as probably you've noticed, A lot of it is support and helping you fix a broken computer or a broken internet connection. But really the thing I'm most interested in is how we can use technology to make our lives better, to make life better, to make it better for our loved ones. That's, to me, the most exciting thing. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Should I have mentioned the Ring video doorbell? I probably should have, huh? I'm like Pavlov's dog, by the way, now. Whenever I hear that, I jump. What? Is that the Ring? All right, somebody's at my door. It's really, you become addicted to this thing. I cannot now live without my Ring video doorbell. The idea is when somebody rings your doorbell, it not only rings your chimes at home, it rings all your mobile devices, and you can answer the door wherever you are. It actually contacts you via the internet. You can see who's at your door. You can see who's walking by your door. It's great for security, but it's, you know, because, of course, bad guys usually come while you're at work, and they ring the doorbell, and if you don't answer, they go around back, and you'll have them on video. But it's also just kind of, you know, there's lots of uses. I know when my my kids come home late at night, I can even say, hey, Abby, I got the video. 2 a.m, really? Really, Abby? The kit's nice because it comes with everything you need to install, including a level. If you have a wired doorbell, it's trivial. That's what we did. It's very easy to install. Just, you know, remove the old doorbell, 2 wires coming out. You attach them to this back plate. See the terminals right there? And then this just attaches to the back plate. But you don't have to have a wired doorbell for this to work. By the way, it will still ring your doorbell at home if you have a wired doorbell and all that. If you don't have a wired doorbell, this has a year-long lithium-ion battery in it. You charge it via USB. And you can even buy it. They have a little chime device that works wirelessly as well. You plug into a plug socket, and you've added a doorbell to a house that didn't have one. So there's a lot of good uses for this. Right now, we've got FedEx shipping for free in the U.S. when you go to ring.com/techguy. Ring.com/techguy. Stop burglaries before they happen. Record what's going on in your doorstep. And be able to answer the doorbell when the delivery guy comes, you know, even if you're at work. I love it. You will too. Ring.com/techguy. It was easy to install, and it really, Ring is the thing. Ring.com/techguy. 8888-ASK. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Did you see this, Dick? This is the iPad Pro. I feel like I could serve you dinner on this.
Yeah, nice.
Monsieur.
Now that's elegant. An elegant way to serve dinner.
Yeah, yeah. And then afterwards, you could just give them the iPad and say.
I was just going to say, can I have the tray?
Yeah. Dick DiBartolo, Mads Maddest writer. We also call him the GizWiz. He's a GizWiz.biz because he's a crazy gadget hound. And every week he brings us something fun. What do you got for us, Sticky D?
Well, this is fun. I went to the SEMA show in Vegas. SEMA is the Specialty Equipment Manufacturers Association, which is everything for cars and vans and trucks. But little did I expect that I would see a 3D printed car. Okay?
What?
Yes, it's from a company called Local Motors, yeah. And they introduced
this. I like that name.
Isn't that, it's kind of
fun.
Now,
you don't drive around in this, wouldn't you? Like, if you got an accident, it would just fall apart, right?
No, the thing, it was very funny because I think it was the CEO, there was a video there at the booth, and she said, so if you have an accident, you bring your car in and we reprint it.
Well, there's still something to be said about that, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And they said, like, a normal car is like 520 parts, whereas the printed car was 50 parts.
Whoa.
So I believe they got started via Kickstarter. The one they showed at the show, there it is.
Looks
there.
Like a dune buggy. I'm looking at the website.
It almost, they call it the Swim. And the PR lady said it's a concept car they're not selling. I said, is it motorized? And she said it has a third-party electric motor in it.
All right.
But she said we will be in 2016 accepting deposits.
What?
On models that we'll deliver in 2017 of printed cars.
Okay. Are they, like, tougher? I mean, is there any...
You know what? They use a combination of plastic and carbon fiber, and I believe they melt it together so that... I think the thing is that you can actually probably get printed parts for when you break something. You could just get a printed...
Cute. It looks like a plastic car. I mean, is it?
It does. Yeah. Yeah, no, there's no getting away from that. Yeah. But I think the idea that we're slowly getting to the point where just about anything now can be 3D printed.
Right. Right.
So that was kind of interesting.
We should point out these are not consumer 3D printers, and you know, you can they have 3D printers that'll print from metal. There's no reason, you know, why it has to be cheesy or unsafe. Even are they planning to test this with the
they are planning to have it totally approved. Huh? Yes, wow. Exactly. Wow. For the new models that will be available to the public.
It looks like it has a surfboard for a roof.
You know what? I think it's because this is, and it has another weird thing, at least in the photos, the speakers on it face out. So
it's a dune buggy kind of.
It's designed for the beach. So there you go. Yeah. So when you go to the, you're a party guy. You see, picked up on
that
instantly.
Oh, party yes. in my little swim.
Yes. Oh, wait a minute. I think I have to give photo tips now, right?
Oh, I got the wrong lower third up. I'm sorry.
So if you want to take a picture of that,
stop,
Leo,
stop.
I would say
stop. He's the Gizwiz. Gizwiz.biz is the place to go, and you can play the brand new What the Heck Is It contest. You don't have to say it like that, though. A picture, a close-up picture of what is obviously curtain rods for twins. I don't know what it is. What is that?
Oh, that's not, I'm going to tell you. Wait, I'll tell you.
It's a six-pack bottle opener.
That's a good guess.
Yeah. Anyway, the point is, if you can identify this, you can win an autographed Mad magazine from Dickie D, or just come up with a crazy wrong answer and win an autographed magazine. All the rules are at the website. Now, I got to look back. Oh, my goodness, golly gosh. It was a corn stripper.
A corn stripper.
Which is not Mitzi from Nebraska, but in fact, a thing for taking the kernels off a corn.
Exactly.
I thought it was a thumb sharpener. I was sure.
No, you were pretty close. Oh, actually, we gave a, you should have sent that in. We gave a Mad magazine to someone who said, I think it's a banana sharpener. No more dull bananas.
Yes. That's even better. Well, yeah. I have a close personal friend that works in Mad Magazine, so I don't have to pull strings like that. go to gizwiz.biz. That's Dick's website. You can play the game. And don't forget gizwiz.tv for his weekly internet TV show with Chad Johnson. It's all these crazy gadgets and a lot more, and it's a lot of fun. And it's all done through Patreon, through your support. So make sure you visit gizwiz.tv to find out more. And Dick, of course, joins us each and every week on this show and on our new Screensavers show and whenever I can get him on for anything else, because he's the best. Thank you, Dickie D. I appreciate
it. Okay, pal.
All right, see you next week. Take care.
Bye.
All right, I got a couple of minutes left. I think enough time to get in Gino from Croatia. Hi, Gino.
Hey, Leo, my brother from another mother.
Great to talk to you. Where in Croatia are you?
I've been Dolik, but I'm actually in Minnesota because I come back here for business. I own a couple of companies.
Oh, nice. We had a wonderful visit last year to Split and Diet. We went to Diocletian's Palace. Had a great time. Yeah, it's a beautiful country. Beautiful.
Well, I've basically lived there for 7 years now, but I'm originally from New York, and I, I moved to Cali. I'm in the fashion industry, and, you got to be in Cali for that. They're in New York. And then I picked up, an invoice one day and said, I'm out of here. I do everything from my computer anyway.
Yeah, it doesn't matter nowadays, does it? You can live anywhere.
Yep. When I fly in, I usually fly into Zagreb, and it just depends. I can go into Zadar or Split. And then from Split, I have to, of course, take the ferry over to my house. So.
Well, if you watched Game of Thrones, you probably saw some of Croatia, because that was one of the places they shot it. And it's beautiful, beautiful country, right on the Mediterranean, or the Aegean, I guess. And it's just gorgeous.
Yeah, and the weather's great, too. And, the property tax is basically zero. So
now I know why you live there. Hey, quickly, we got to get your question in.
Okay. So basically, this is the deal, okay? It's kind of two parts, kind of connected, kind of not. But let's start with number one. I have a Nano, the little square one?
Yeah.
Okay. So you apply it to your shirt, and then you get on with
clip it on.
You listen to music. Right?
Yeah, no interface, but you could play and listen,
Right. Well, my face is pretty, so I don't like that. but basically, this is it. Okay, so I download music from YouTube. Okay. And of course, when you download it, I use a company called Free YouTube to MP3. Okay.
Okay. I was going to say, because you're not going to be able to use that, but if you turn it into an MP3, you should be able to.
Right. Well, it converts it. Right. So then it, there I go. I download it. And then I basically connect my Nano to the, my laptop. And then I apply the songs and I upload it. Right.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, everything's working good. All of a sudden, now that was with Windows 8.1. Okay, so all of a sudden, I do the free upgrade, so now I'm at Windows 10, right? So
actually, it's worse than that. You're at 20 seconds. We're out of time. I can't finish the call, but I'll answer right after we go off the air. I want to thank Heather Hammond for a great phone ranger bit. You are the best. Nathan Staten, our musical director, who knocked it out of the park today. Thanks to all of you. Vive la France. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great Geek Week. Bye-bye. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security and security now. I mean, I can go on and on. And on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today and Tech News Tonight. And of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.